no matter what the emotion is, anger, sadness, loneliness, needs to come out. Otherwise, it shows up in ways that is very dangerous. So you want to talk about eating compulsively. You want to talk about stress eating. That's fine. But don't equate emotion in a negative way with eating. I think we should all be emotional eaters.
You're listening to Eat for Life, the show that aims to help you identify the root causes of what ails you so you can heal and live the life you are meant for. I'm your host, Sammy G. I brought my dear friend and colleague, Mindy Gorman-Plutzer, back on the show to talk about diet culture and how it profits off of disconnection with our bodies. We also talk about the challenge with anti-diet culture and the true meaning of being an intuitive eater. Mindy Gorman-Plutzer brings 25 years of experience to her private practice as a certified functional nutrition and lifestyle practitioner and eating psychology coach. Mindy's life experience and training inspired her to create a framework that combines functional nutrition, positive psychology, and mind-body science, introducing a compassionate resolution to physical and emotional challenges resulting from chronic and complex health issues as they relate to eating disorders. She's also the author of The Freedom Promise, 7 Steps to Stop Fearing What Food Will Do to You and Start Embracing What It Can Do for You. Well, welcome, Mindy. I am so excited to have you back on the show.
Not as excited as I am to be back with you.
Thank you, Mindy. For all of our listeners, this episode is just two friends that also happen to be practitioners having a real and honest conversation about what we're seeing and how diet trends are shifting with new language. And a lot of what we're seeing is quite concerning and quite frankly, just leads to more disordered eating. Mindy, as you know, when I was growing up, it was all about diet culture. Fat was the enemy, and that's when we started seeing mass production of all kinds of food products that were labeled as healthy because they were fat-free. Never mind all the sugar, the bleached wheat flour, and chemicals, they were fat-free. And of course, being an impressionable 16-year-old, I bought into all the hype, thought I was being healthy. And what's interesting, Mindy, you and I have had this conversation many times. Now we've shifted in the opposite direction to this anti-diet culture that says eat things that are inflammatory and can feed health problems in the name of body positivity. And I just want to say, disclaimer, to be fair, I completely understand why this shift has occurred, given how utterly stifling and restrictive diet culture is. But you and I know there is a better way. So with that being said, Mindy, what is the difference between this anti-diet approach, what we call an all-foods diet, versus a whole foods approach based on the needs of the individual?
That, Sammy, is a loaded question. And if I can just say one thing about diet culture. Diet culture basically profits off of our disconnection from our bodies. Diet culture is telling us to eat this, don't eat that. And to your point, we now have a whole community of anti-diet culture followers and practitioners who, in my opinion, are basically just creating another set of rules. And within this structure is still this disconnect, because we're still being told to eat this, don't eat that, just in a different way. And I know we can really get into this because it really takes us going down the rabbit hole during this discussion. If it seems to our audiences that we're skipping around, please forgive me, forgive us, because it's such a passionate topic for me that I promise to try to make every point and land every point I want to make. But we have to start here. We have to start with the fact that there is a disconnect. We are disconnected from our bodies for a variety of reasons. There's trauma, there's illness. But to answer your question, an all foods diet, an all foods fit diet, is very often the therapeutic answer to eating disorder recovery. That in order to prove your commitment to your recovery, you need to be willing to eat all foods. the intuitive eating community, and I know we'll talk about that, they believe that you have the right to listen to your intuition in terms of what your body wants. That's intuition, right? Listening to your gut. But your gut is not telling you to eat all of these industrialized products that are being sold to us as food. It's not food. Whole foods, a whole foods diet, is basically made up of unadulterated foods that grow from the earth, are part of nature in the form of animal products, if that is what you choose to engage in. But the thing also about a whole foods diet is not everybody's bodies function properly from eating everything, even in a whole foods diet. So this is where that connection to one's body has to be honored and respected. And that's why I started with that concept. Because I know I can speak for myself. I thought I was eating the healthiest diet on earth, eating an all whole foods diet. My body didn't agree. I had digestive issues to deal with. I had hormonal issues to deal with. I had adrenal fatigue to deal with. My body was not accepting of and functioning optimally from everything that I was feeding it.
Mindy, that was beautifully said. I really appreciate you, you know, breaking that down for us, because I think it's so important that we look at all of these, dare I say, trends with a bigger lens. Again, as I shared in the intro, what we're seeing is just a lot of misinformation, again, in praise of body positivity and body, you know, we want to honor our bodies, definitely. And you also spoke into that as well. But we just have to be really careful with the messages that we're getting that can really be confusing and be throwing off our body's innate ability to be able to discern, well, okay, even if this is a whole food, maybe it's not the best whole food for me. You know, in episode 21, you gave a brilliant overview of how insurance mandates contribute to more disordered eating, because it's about the money, not supporting the patient. And you shared about that a bit ago. I'm curious what your perspective is on that and what we're seeing in this broader context, this broader narrative of food and diet culture.
Unfortunately, so many of the residential treatment centers and PHP, the hospitalization programs, the IOPs, the intensive outpatient programs, if the patients are using insurance to pay for their treatment, and I also want to say this is not to disparage the integrity of the practitioners who are engaging with these patients, but they need to follow the rules that are set forth by the insurance companies.
Right.
And unfortunately, the parameters that the insurance companies use are basically based on weight restoration and behavior modification. So that really doesn't allow for the exploration of context, the exploration of how this patient came to this place originally. It doesn't allow for root cause resolution. It doesn't allow for how our bodies are functioning as a result of those behaviors that have been so detrimental, physiologically and psychologically. I share a story that was so heartbreaking for me to read when I was doing some research into the topic of eating disorder recovery and why traditional protocols are basically failing in terms of providing for sustainable recovery. I read the story of an 11-year-old girl who was in a residential treatment center. She was on a feeding tube in order to help her body restore weight. And because this was a successful method, the insurance company deemed that she needed to go home. Her treatment team knew that that was not right, and she was not ready to be discharged. The only alternative they had was to remove the feeding tube so that she would lose the weight. And then the insurance could mandate her stay. There's nothing more to say about that. So that's where I have trouble. That's where I have trouble. And, you know, for the purpose of our conversation here, Sammy, I think, you know, the audience today is perhaps more engaged in disordered eating behaviors. We're not talking about people who are at the level, needing the level of care that I just described. That's a whole different entity. I am always happy to make those referrals if I feel somebody needs a higher level of care. I'm more concerned with the listener who is engaging in disordered eating behaviors, very similar to chronic restricting, binge eating disorder. The person who's restricting all day and then finding herself binging in the evening. I'm talking about the person who is eating according to shoulds and shouldn'ts. Basically, her behavior is being driven by misinformation that is guided by misguided beliefs. And that is where this conversation needs to land, because intermittent fasting, intuitive eating, it can all just be another diet.
Yeah, yeah. And this is why I really was excited to have this conversation with you, because, you know, again, as I shared initially, when I was growing up, fat was the enemy. And, you know, I worked myself out into oblivion. I did lose a lot of weight and I felt good initially. And then over time, of course, there was nutrient depletions and other things going on. And it just fed into, you know, my binge eating. It just fed into more of this disordered thought process. And again, our concern, and we've had so many of these conversations, and what we're seeing, especially with young girls, you know, and young women, is that it feels all great and rah-rah right now. But what's happening with your relationship to yourself? And of course, that's going to permeate every other area of your life, not just the foods that you eat, but being able to develop that connection with self. What do we call that with regard to food? Is that our relationship to food? Is that food peace? Is that how would you describe that?
Well, you know, Sammy, that I believe that recovery from anything, recovery being to regain what was lost or taken, is relational. And relationship with self is reflected in our relationship with everything else. So food is a symptom of that deficiency in relationship to self. And our relationship to food, our relationship with food, stems from messaging, from a belief system. Beliefs basically are story plus experience. That's how we form our belief system. So it's very important when we are looking to explore a relationship with food, to transform our relationship with food, to look at the context within which this belief system about food and our bodies evolved.
Yeah.
Overeating, undereating, are all symptoms of something deeper.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I loved how you mentioned the trauma and the abuse piece. Of course, there's the biochemistry, which you and I are both very, very familiar, and that's how we practice. This makes me think of when, you know, when I'm hearing you share of a recent experience I had working with a client in New York that also has a dietitian in New York. So the three of us were on this conference call, and this particular young woman has a lot of mental health challenges that are pretty severe. And I had made recommendations based on chemistry because we're trying to normalize brain function, basically. And the first thing that the dietitian said when she got on the phone was, "Oh, so you're just doing another restrictive diet." I mean, it was instantaneous judgment. And I didn't even really have an opportunity. And she's saying this in front of our mutual client, right? So think of the messaging that the miscommunication and the mixed messages that she's getting. It was instant judgment and not even wanting to, like, I didn't even have the opportunity to explain, this is why I'm taking this approach. And I want to help this young woman get well. and I want to help her feel better so she can have more brain function and more awareness to make these good choices and engage in that way. Again, that connection to self. And that was so far removed, and it wasn't going to come, obviously, with an all foods approach. And I'm not exaggerating here. Things like copper overload are very real, especially in women in relation to estrogen. At the extreme, copper can cause psychosis. Copper can cause very extreme, very deep depression, very, very high anxiety. And people can be impacted by simply eating chocolate. And that can trigger an episode. And that's how kind of granular I get in my practice. But it was instant, again, judgment, instant. I don't want to hear it. This is just a restrictive diet. That leads me into this whole concept of intuitive eating, because we know that that's also really big right now. And as you touched on, that's, you know, that tends to be just another diet, right?
It's all how it's approached. I do want to give kudos to Evelyn Triboli and Elise Resch, who came up with the concept of intuitive eating. Their intention was not to foster another diet. Their intention is to promote an anti-diet culture. But what I see happening is that the scope of intuition is being skewed. First of all, let's talk about somebody with an eating disorder or severe disordered eating. A woman who is frightened of her hunger, who doesn't trust her hunger, who doesn't trust her intuition to know when she's had enough, who's afraid to start eating because she's afraid she won't be able to stop. How can you become an intuitive eater when you don't have a sense of intuitiveness? So we really have to start there. And that goes back to what I spoke of in the very first part of this conversation, connection to one's body. I'll tell you how I look at intuitive eating, how I live intuitively with my diet. I've empowered myself to make choices based on how something, a food that I choose to eat, is going to make me feel. Why would I choose to eat something if I'm not going to feel well as a result of it? That, to me, is the true meaning of being an intuitive eater. To be so connected to my body that I understand the symptomology and I look to head it off when I'm making my choices. Now, that's not to say that there aren't times that I will deviate or I will eat past the point of being comfortably full just because something is so good. That's okay. Difference is I won't feel guilty about it. I'll take responsibility. I'll be accountable. But for the most part, intuitive eating is all about being connected to the wisdom of your body.
Yeah, I'm so glad you broke that down and shared what some of the pitfalls are with that. And, you know, you and I are both the same in this regard. I know there are certain things that are going to make me feel crappy, and I stay away from them. And like you, if I want to indulge in something, I will, and I'll enjoy it. And I'm not going to feel bad about that. There are times, yes, when a meal is just so wonderful and maybe we eat a little bit too much because it was so enjoyable. And I think that that's honoring as well. So we're not, this isn't restriction though. People look at this and say restriction. Again, you know, the experience that I shared with the dietitian that I was trying to partner with. But it's that self-care piece. It's honoring self and honoring what does and doesn't work for you. That's not restriction. And that's really what we're talking about here. Things are just getting so blown out of control in all of these different directions. And I think it's creating more confusion for people, more disorder, more struggle, more guilt and shame. And you and I both want to encourage people, or to guide people, I should say, away from that.
The other thing that happens is that we get attached to labels. We put ourselves into boxes. And I think that is a result of all of these programs that are out there, right? We can follow a paleo program, a keto program, a pegan program, which is now, right?
Yes.
Ketotarian program,
yes, pescatarian.
and so we're getting boxed in. So what happens if we deviate? We feel as though we've fallen off the wagon and we failed. Again, we are not connected to the wisdom of our bodies. You and I spoke last time about body hunger and heart hunger and head hunger. Following any of these diet programs are basically forcing us into that box of listening to head hunger. I should and I shouldn't. This reminds me of somebody I know recently who went to see a dietitian. Woman had beautiful credentials and put this client on a program where she was told to eat 6 ounces of protein at every meal, 6 ounces of non-starchy vegetables, and whatever the amount of the starch was. And immediately that sent up a red flag for me, because what if on any particular day your body needed 4 ounces? Or what if it was 8 ounces? How are you being taught to listen to the wisdom of your body? For me, in my mind, that is just as dangerous as telling a child at the dinner table to clean everything on your plate.
Yes, I remember that,
right?
Growing up.
Yep. Because mm-hmm. that message is telling that child that he or she is not capable of trusting the wisdom of his or her body.
Yes, honoring that hunger and fullness.
Right.
You know, that meter, that gauge tends to get broken with these constant messages. Be sure to stick around to learn why your emotions have a place at the table and what you can do to move from fearing what food will do to you to embracing what food can do for you. And if you're ready to start the healing process, I invite you to book a complimentary consultation with me to see how I can help you overcome things like hormonal imbalances, food sensitivities, ADHD, chronic fatigue, depression, anxiety, brain fog, and digestive distress. Go to eat4.life, then click the free consultation button to book your free discovery call today. Mindy, to go a little bit deeper into how the body responds to food, what does that really mean? Because, you know, again, you can eat a whole foods diet. You could be doing paleo, eating a ton of vegetables, getting your proteins in, getting some good starches in, and still that feedback mechanism, you know, is kind of left to the wayside. Because as you beautifully shared, I'm within the structure, right? I'm paleo. It's like I'm a CrossFitter. I'm paleo, and I got to be within this specific structure. What does this really mean, and how can people start to think about this in a different way, and how we're responding to and how food feels in our body?
The first piece of advice that I always give my clients before I even make a recommendation for a therapeutic protocol, and I say that with deep meaning rather than a diet, a therapeutic protocol, the way that they are eating that will help their body respond in a positive way, is to slow down, to pay attention, to use a food log. How hungry are you before? How full are you after? And how satisfied are you? That's very important, but slowing down is essential. To pay attention to the taste, the texture, even the temperature of the food. To chew it slowly. And let your body let you know how it's responding. You could go through a whole bunch of diagnostic tests, have your colonoscopy, your endoscopy, stool tests, whatever it might be, and everything can come back normal. But yet your body is not responding the way you think it could. So that's really important to start tracking, assessing and tracking. That's step one. And then making adjustments based off that. Of course, there are functional tests that we can do. And, you know, as we say in our line of work, tests don't guess. But before we even get to that point, to even know what we need to test for, let the body come back and give signs. Symptoms are messages from your body that are calling for your attention. And if you don't quiet the noise and slow down enough, you're not going to hear what they are. So that's the first step.
Again, beautifully put. And as you and I both know and embody in our respective work, we're big fans of tracking. And often I will get pushback. Well, I don't have time. I don't really feel like doing it. It's too much. But as you just beautifully shared, look at how much data you can get by simply slowing down. Most people eat on the go or on the run. And so that feedback mechanism is completely broken. And, you know, we're just not able to really discern and understand, oh, wow, those bell peppers I had for lunch, they're not really agreeing with me. I think I'm going to write that down. I wonder why. Before I sit down, can I take several deep breaths so that I can get out of fight and flight and calm my nervous system and prepare my body for, you know, for the digestive process, which is going to happen much more smoothly if we are calm and if we are taking our time. I'll be the first person to raise my hand and say I've always been a fairly fast eater, always been a very anxious eater. And so this process for me really took a lot of time to just remind myself to always engage, to remind myself, no, you don't need to eat while standing up in the kitchen because you want to rush and eat your lunch. Go sit down at the table, set a nice table, have some flowers on the table. As you described, really enjoy the texture and the aroma and the flavors of the food. Take your time chewing. You know, chewing is a really important process because that's actually, we have a lot of enzymes in our mouths that start that breakdown process of our food. There just so much is going on there, and we're often so busy in our world today and oblivious to that.
You mentioned the patient, the client that is resistant to slowing down, to taking the time to track. Well, that deserves to be explored as well. You know, Sammy, I always say that the disordered eating is not the problem. It started out as a solution. So here we go back to context. If there is hesitation, if there is uncomfortable feelings associated with that slowing down, with feeling the feelings, with even allowing them to emerge, to surface, we need to explore that. So sometimes the process takes a little longer, and we need to spend time in this very first stage of exploration and story.
Love that. I couldn't agree more. Yeah, going back to story, going back to, again, any trauma that may have occurred that's creating that fear and that terror about doing any kind of tracking or, to your point, slowing down.
Slowing down.
You know, obviously, if we're slowing down, we're kind of forced to sit with our feelings and our emotions, and that can be really painful and really, really hard.
And for some, connecting to one's body is a very painful process.
Yeah.
And that's where a person needs to know that they need not do it alone. They can have a partner on this journey, somebody to walk beside them. And that's very important to honor that part of the story.
Yeah, and often someone that's been there and can really not only have the compassion and the empathy, but that deep intuitive knowing of, I'm here for you because I've been here before. Mindy, you have a quote that I really love. Your emotions have a place at the table. And again, this is expanding on what we just talked about. Would you mind sharing with us what does this really mean?
I came to that realization after confronting and really being bombarded with so many blogs and programs out there that deal with emotional eating. And it's always presented as something that is very negative. And for me, that kind of started the wheels turning in equating feeling your emotions with something negative. So when we're talking about emotional eating, what we're basically talking about is eating that is triggered by emotion and triggered by the fact that the person engaged in it doesn't want to feel emotion. And that's where the negativity comes in. In order to heal, in order to move forward, in order to become the most vibrant version of ourselves, we've got to realize that emotion must be expressed. So I just have trouble with the whole concept of emotional eating. I want to be emotional at the table. I want to feel joy. If I'm feeling anything but joy, I want to feel that as well. So it can be expressed, because I think it was Robert Frost who says the only way out is through. Let the emotion be expressed, no matter what the emotion is. Anger, sadness, loneliness needs to come out. Otherwise, it shows up in ways that is very dangerous. So you want to talk about eating compulsively. You want to talk about stress eating. That's fine, but don't equate emotion in a negative way with eating. I think we should all be emotional leaders.
I love that. I love that because our emotions are powerful. They give us information, as you just so beautifully shared, and this is good feedback.
Before, we just made mention of the fact that we might overindulge just because something is so good, right? Well, you know, it could be grandma's apple pie or mom's lasagna or whatever it is that is out of the realm of what we normally eat. But the emotion that is attached to those foods bring us joy. They bring us reminders. They fill us up with emotions that are so far more nourishing than anything we would put on our plates. I don't want to live a life without that.
Yeah, I certainly don't either. And I'm thinking about this for me. My grandmother died when I was quite young. I was 12 years old, but she was amazing in the kitchen. And every holiday, we were over there with this extravagant, everything was made from scratch, this extravagant layout. And her cinnamon rolls were the best in the world. Family members still rave about her cinnamon rolls, and she would cut them with a piece of thread. Wow. And she made her own icing, and you know, and of course this is all gluten and sugar and blah blah blah, and I've done my very best, and I think I did a fairly good job of replicating, you know, a gluten-free, you know, what we would call a healthier version, I guess. But again, that connection there, and even if I did have one of her cinnamon rolls from a recipe, it would bring me that joy in remembering what that was like to stand there next to her while she's rolling them up and, you know, cutting them with the thread and making the icing and all of that. So that is so powerful. I'm so glad you said that. And you've said this before too, which I love, you know, how our society is so driven by negative emotions. Don't worry, be happy. So we're stuffing our emotions, pretending a lot, and eating that. It's literal and it's a metaphor, mm-hmm. right? And I'm just curious, with all this being said, what are some things you mentioned slowing down and the getting really connected that way, but what are some other things that our listeners can do to kind of start this healing process?
You brought up breath work, and that is essential for stimulating the parasympathetic part of the brain, the rest and digest part of the brain. And we can think about rest and digest from a physiological standpoint, right? When we're in that stress response, that chronic stress response, we're not digesting, absorbing, assimilating, or metabolizing. But think about how when we're in that stress response, we're not digesting, absorbing, assimilating, or metabolizing life.
Wow, yes.
Right? Appetite is life. Denying ourselves our hunger, denying ourselves food when we're hungry, is the same as denying ourselves breath. So start with breath. I also believe it's very important to begin the exploration process of who you are as an eater. How are you eating? We talked about fast, slow, or moderate. Why are you eating? We talked about emotion, shoulds, shouldn'ts. And In my experience, personally and clinically, when we look at the context of how and why we're eating, and when we're eating too, that's a big part of it. The what takes care of itself, because we are, again, going back to the beginning of our conversation, connected to the wisdom of our bodies. Now, what do we do if we can't get connected? Right? Herein lies the rub. How do we get connected? By believing that you are worthy of connecting to your body. As traumatic as your story might be, do some work, get some support around the fact that you need not be attached to a past that has no future. You can turn the page on that story. You can face to face with a blank page where you can start to write your happily ever after. You are worthy. You are worthy. And practice consistency. And that's difficult for a lot of people, but that's why it's so important to partner with a practitioner who gets it, who gets you, who sees you as an individual.
I love that. That's so beautiful. And I think that consistency piece, I love that you brought that up too, Mindy, because I know for me, having consistency just allows me to connect even more. And I think I've sometimes hear negativity around that, but when you have a plan and a routine, and again, it doesn't have to be perfect. I'm not saying there needs to be a, you know, black and white set, you know, setting those things, you know, again, whichever way works for you, whatever eating path works for you, time of day, whatever the case may be, it really helps set the tone for everything else. So I'm so grateful for you including that. Mindy, is there anything else you'd like to share with us today?
Well, I think it's very important that when we engage in a therapeutic protocol, when we decide that there is an eating plan that we want to follow or that our bodies are telling us would be helpful for us to follow, it can change. We don't have to set it in stone because our bodies change. Our bodies change daily. They certainly change seasonally. Our needs change with the decades of our lives. So we need to bring flexibility to the table, if you will. That's number one, and not box ourselves into that label. But my point is that if you decide to follow a certain way of eating, living, make sure you understand your why. Is it your body guiding you? Or is it an influencer on social media guiding you?
Mm.
That's really important because the idea here is to move from fearing what food will do to you to embracing what food can do for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Brilliant. Wonderfully said. Thank you so much, Mindy. I am just so blessed to have you in my life. I appreciate our time together today.
Thank you, Sammy. I feel the same way. And we will continue this conversation. And I invite your listeners to reach out to me if they have any questions or concerns or want clarification regarding anything I might have said today.
Yes, and we'll definitely be linking to your website in the show notes so people know how to reach you. And again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Diet culture tells us to eat this, don't eat that. Anti-diet culture says eat whatever you want, even if it makes you feel crappy. Both are just another set of rules. What if instead we slow down and listen to the cues our bodies give us? What if we empower ourselves to make choices based on how a particular food feels in our body, rather than a dogmatic approach based on someone else's response to food? My hope is that this episode leaves you feeling empowered to explore another way of eating that allows your emotions to be fully expressed. As Mindy so eloquently shared, we should all be emotional eaters. You can find Mindy at freedompromise.com. Don't miss an episode of Eat for Life. Make sure you hit the follow button on your favorite podcast player.